Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Write Club. The first rule of Write Club is you don't talk about Write Club, but we'll make an exception in your case. Hello, and welcome to Write Club, the podcast for writers and readers everywhere. I'm Linda, and with me in the studio are Steph, Teresa, Nicola, Pat, Heather, and Wilfie, the podcast puppy.
Hi!
We have to work on Wilfie's hello. Today we'll be talking about creativity. What is it? How can we nurture it? Where do our creative ideas come from? Stephanie will be reading to us from her new work in progress. Pat will be talking to us about creativity. And we'll hear what books Teresa and Julian Cohen have on their bedside tables. But first, Nicola is going to ask us to
name the novel.
Set in a period from 1500 to 1535, ooh, it's a sympathetic, fictionalized biography, which won the Man Booker Prize and the National Book Critics Circle Award, and it was named by The Observer as one of the top 10 best historical novels ever.
Okay.
They got it because we talked earlier a couple of weeks ago.
It's the first in a trilogy, and the sequel was called Bring Up the Bodies, which I think is a brilliant name. It was largely set in Wiltshire, and it was set in a location that was very famous for being one of the family home of one of Henry VIII's wives.
Okay.
Well, nothing from me.
No,
really?
No.
Wolf Hall.
Wolf Hall.
Wolf Hall. And the last in the trilogy will be called The Mirror and the Light, and expected to cover the last 4 years of Cromwell's life.
Right. Mm. And both Wolf Hall and Bring Up the Bodies won the Booker Prize, didn't they?
Did they?
Yes, they did. About 3 years apart.
Wow.
Mm. So maybe the third in the trilogy will complete the hat trick.
That would be a first.
Mary Ann Gwynne of the Seattle Times said, "I have never felt so completely catapulted into a character's mind, not to mention a long ago and far away place."
Wow. Mm.
So lots of lovely reviews of that.
Yeah. Very good review. Yeah. Well, thank you, Nicola. That was a good one. And now Stephanie's going to read from something new, I think. Want to tell us about it, Steph?
Yeah, I've just been playing around, as I said last week. I've been playing around with some ideas for some new characters for another book. I've filled lots of exercise books with scribblings, but I thought I'd read you a few hundred words from one effort, see if you can give me some feedback on it. This is, if you like, the opening of, perhaps, of another novel. I didn't know her, but I'd seen her around. The first time I remember was in the cafe two doors down from the office. I'd decided to treat myself to the soup of the day. There's something very comforting about thick homemade soup with a lump of granary bread on a frosty day. It was her feet that caught my attention. They were encased in faded fabric sandals, the sort of thing I imagine people wear to surfing beaches or music festivals. I remember shivering, just thinking how cold her toes must be as I slid into a seat at a table opposite her. There was an air of real grubbiness about her. She was wearing a washed-out sweatshirt which looked as if it had been in recent contact with slobbering dogs or excitable children with snotty noses. When the waitress presented her with a large mug of tea, she gripped it with both hands and closed her eyes as she took the first sip. Her dark hair was riddled with coarse wires of silver. She pulled it back in the plain elastic band, a fat one like the postman uses, but I still thought it could do with a good brush. She wasn't wearing any makeup, and her top lip looked dirty with down. Her eyebrows weren't what you'd call groomed either. When she reached for a magazine from the rack beside her table, I noticed her bare, bitten nails. Her fingers were red and looked sore, but it was the angry purple bruises around her wrist that made me freeze with my spoon halfway to my mouth. She snatched at her sleeve and tugged it down over her hand, clutching the ends in her fist. Our eyes met for the briefest moment, but I was already turning away, pretending I hadn't seen. Once someone's attracted your attention, it's odd how often you see them. Maybe she'd been tripping along our high street for years and I'd just ignored her. But after that day in the cafe, I kept spotting her. I was in the chemist collecting Beryl's prescription when I saw her lugging a bag into the dry cleaners not a week after that day in the cafe. She was shorter than I'd imagined, easily less than 5 feet tall, and in jeans that just made her look dumpy. And she was still wearing those dreadful espadrilles which did nothing to make her look any taller. I noticed her in the newsagent a few mornings. She was just ahead of me in the queue on one occasion. "Just the Telegraph, please," she'd said, although Malcolm had already picked it out and was folding it before she spoke. She handed over the exact money and scurried to the door with her head down. Once I saw her step into the gutter to move out of the way of an elderly lady walking on frame. She almost collided with a cyclist who called something at her over his shoulder. She went scarlet and I could see her mouthing sorry. I almost went over to check if she was all right, but I didn't. With some people, you just don't get the feeling they want to be spoken to. She was one of those. So, when Mrs. Whittaker arrived at the office, by appointment, naturally, to make arrangements for Mr. Whittaker's funeral, I recognised her immediately.
Brilliant, brilliant. I loved it. Yeah, I'm immediately intrigued and interested in these two characters, the observer and the observed. We learn as much about one, she is presumably well-groomed, well-organised and respectable, as the other, not concerned with appearance, considerate, perhaps poor, perhaps abused, all of that. And I think as an opening, it's just great. Oh, by the way, I specifically didn't wear my espadrilles today.
Lucky.
She's short, she's scruffy, her clothes are too tight. What are you trying to say, Stephanie? But no, I loved it, I loved it. You know, I've got a few notes of things. When you say I slid into a seat at the table opposite her,
yes.
Is it an opposite
yes.
table or yes. the same yes. table? No, that's a little lack.
Yes,
you know, that's a tiny little thing, just a lack of clarity. And I love that, you know, when you say the sort of thing I imagine people wear to surfing beaches or music festivals, she's never done those things. Mm. She's never been to those. She imagines what people might wear there. So I thought that was just lovely. And even, you know, I decided to treat myself to soup of the day. What kind of a treat is that? It's, you know, so you just learn so much about both of them. Yeah, I thought it's a really good start. They're not stereotypes, I don't think. I think they're going to be well-rounded characters because the one who appears to be sort of downtrodden, she reads a proper newspaper, so she's obviously got the intellect and, you know, whatever, possibly does a good crossword or, you know what I mean? It's, so I think it's really just a great start, actually.
It sort of sets up an expectation about, you know, what on earth is going to be the relationship or the interaction between these two characters. I particularly liked the slobbering dogs or excitable children reference. For some reason, though, on when you describe her dark hair was riddled with coarse wires of silver. I didn't like riddled for some reason.
It's not quite the word, is it?
No, I couldn't
the wires of silver.
The wires of silver were good. And I just couldn't think of a
Well, I've just had her in my head and she's got this dark hair, but it's going grey. And there's, you know how grey hair is very coarse?
Yes.
By comparison.
Yeah. It's wiry.
It's more wiry than natural hair.
I did wonder on that bit as well, just where you've put, but I still thought it could do with a good brush. When I read it, it jarred a little bit because I thought, still?
Yeah.
Does that mean you thought
I've also used the word just a couple of times, which I don't particularly think adds anything.
Mm-hmm. On the point of the, with a good brush, when I read it to myself, she'd pulled it back in a plain elastic band, a fat one like the postman uses, but I still thought it could do with a good brush. And I thought, that's making it sound as if it's the elastic band that needs the good brush.
Yes.
But when you read it,
I put different punctuation in it.
Yeah.
Quite right, Pat, I did, and I noticed quite a lot of punctuation.
It was the emphasis change. I couldn't actually, I didn't actually notice what you did in terms of punctuation, but I just thought, oh, that sounds fine now. Maybe it was just me.
I love the way you can tell, as you said, as much about the person who's observing the fact that she finds something comforting about thick homemade soup, which I love as well, but the fact that she feels the need for comfort is telling us something already, and the fact that she cares so much about her appearance
is it a treat because normally she's on a diet, or because she usually works through her lunch hour, or because she's had a tough morning?
And the other thing was, it was a bit of a shock actually at the end when this woman is working in a funeral parlour, so I'm very intrigued, want to know more, and it's just getting better and better and interesting as it went along.
But did she kill him?
Well, I thought it's a very interesting beginning, and I said I really hesitate to comment too much because it's so early, and so you really don't know that much about where it's going. Sometimes when you have more context, you can make better critiques, I guess. I thought that perhaps the comments on her appearance could be condensed a bit, because we have just about a whole page describing what she looked like, and I thought perhaps some of the things, like not wearing makeup and her hair needed brushing and stuff, it seems to me that you could combine those into kind of one observation, because it's taking up an awful lot of space and time to describe her appearance, her slovenly appearance. And I just thought that's interesting in that it gives us an idea about who she is, but it's not as interesting as a plot point would be or something. Mm-hmm. And so I thought that might need a little attention to condense it.
I don't agree. I like it as it is, and it's also telling you about the speaker, the narrative.
Yes, it is.
Value and what their observations are.
Dirty was down.
Jumped off the page at me, being really nice.
And also, she catches her eye when she's seen the bruises, but I was already turning away, pretending I hadn't seen. And then again, when she steps into the path of a cyclist, the narrator almost intervenes but hesitates. And again, it's like, it just tells you about her. She doesn't want to get involved, really. She perhaps feels she ought to be helping this woman, or ought to at least offer some help, but she holds back. So, yeah, I think it's subtle. And funny as well. It did make me smile in a couple of places. So
I wondered if there was some significance as well to the by appointment, of course.
Yes.
I didn't know whether that was a bit loaded.
You have to make an appointment to go. And I have played around with this whole thing about how the front door is locked in the funeral parlour, so you can't just walk in off the street.
It's not like that in Ireland, believe me.
Oh, is it not?
in my experience anyway.
I thought perhaps in the beginning, I was thinking it was some sort of personnel office or something, human resources office, perhaps it could have been. But then the arrangements for his funeral, I guess I was thinking human resources, you would talk about finance or whatever, perhaps. Mm. But so I'm accepting that it's taking place in a funeral parlor that's where she's working. Mm-hmm. And you really piqued my interest with the last sentence, of course.
Yeah.
So that's a really good catch. But I stick with my comment about too much space. Yeah. I mean, it's just, it could all be said with just some different phrasing, I think. Mm. The majority disagree with me, so.
It's up to Stephanie.
And
as I say, this is very much the kind of first, it's probably never even going to, make it. Trying to get to know the two characters. Yeah. That's what I was trying to do.
I think sometimes when you
are trying to get to know people, you can do the questionnaires and stuff, but if you can put them together in an environment,
and get them talking.
Or not talking, or one's noticed the other. Yeah. I don't know if the others noticed the one not, but who knows, we'll see.
Yeah, that's interesting. When Mrs. Whittaker comes in to the funeral parlour, does she recognise the person she's dealing with as having seen her before? Does it have a working title, or is it really not that far?
It's really not that far, and even the plot is a bit vague, if I'm honest.
Yeah, that's great.
I just like the idea of a lady that works in an undertaker's. I just think that would be such an interesting job.
Yeah,
there's some great opportunities.
You should volunteer.
And also, it does need great discretion, and that's perhaps why she's reticent about intervening. And maybe it's something that's built into her over her years of working there. You never know when you're going to be dealing with this person in a very sensitive situation.
Yeah. I thought it was because, as she said, some people you just know they don't want to be spoken to. Mm. And so I thought she was just being considerate of what she perceived of that
woman. I'm overreading, you're right.
Well, if anybody's listening that works in a funeral parlour, please do get in touch with me because I need to speak to somebody.
Come and join our Facebook group. You find yourself invaluable.
I need to speak to somebody that works in an undertaker's to understand a little bit more about how they work.
I had a friend who was raised in a funeral home. Her father owned it, and they lived upstairs above the offices. And she said they had such fun when they would have kids over to spend the night or to play. Because they would play hide-and-seek, and they would go down in the coffins. And,
oh, God.
Said,
hiding under a corpse.
Thinking about
Steph, I do hope you do continue at least to let us know about who she is and what happened. But the purple bruises on her wrists is very intriguing because if indeed her husband has just died, that could go a lot of ways, couldn't it?
Well, you think around the wrist, has she been tied up, and is it a game they play,
was she has she been physically abused? Did she kill him, etc.?
That's something we haven't thought of.
Right. So, thank you, Steph.
Thank you.
Thank you for that. So. Pat's going to tell us something about creativity, I think.
Yeah, I thought I'd spark us off. But you have to do some of the work. Pause now for rustling of papers.
Effects, like the BBC now.
I'm handing out pieces of paper. And you need a piece of paper. And you need to draw as quickly as you can 30 circles.
30, okay. Specifically?
Yeah, but I've already given my fellow podcasters...
Your victims.
30 circles.
A piece of paper with 30 circles. Okay. And this is a trick to try and improve or increase or develop your creativity. As quickly as you can you turn each of the circles into a different object?
A different object?
Yeah, go for quantity, not quality. So, for instance, one could be a clock.
We have to turn them into that, not just write inside them what they could
be. No, you do it. You draw it. And I don't think one clock telling the time 30 different ways is going to be acceptable. But you just go for it as quick as you can. Make a start and just see how far we got with that. And did anyone get more than 10?
No. I got 2, 7. 3,
4, me 7, 2, 7, 8, 9, 10.
You got 10.
Whoa. There you go. Less than 6.
5. 5 for me.
Okay, 7. How creative 7. Were we? We've got clocks, yes.
Yeah, we've all got a clock.
So. I noticed Heather and I have both got a frying pan with an egg. That's meant to be a crescent moon, and that's meant to be yin and yang.
That's nice.
And we all got a smiley face.
Yeah.
I've got a magnifying glass as
very
well.
Good.
Oh, that's right.
And I've got a baby with a dummy in his mouth.
That's good. That rolls the nose.
And I've got an open mouth.
That's
very good. Yeah, very good.
That's good. And a clock. I have a globe with different
world.
Very good.
Continents on it, a full moon, a sun.
I've done a sun.
A clock and a smiley face.
Yeah, and I've got a sunflower as well.
Oh, sunflower. Nicola, what did you get?
I've got a sunflower, I've got a sun, I've got a crescent moon, I've got a button, I've got a Michelin man, I've got a cat, and I've got... I wasn't actually sure what that was.
A slot.
A money box.
A money on its way.
Exactly.
Emerging. Well, that is one of 9 ways to become more creative in a short space of time, apparently. And I'll share with you the others. These were taken from I think from a business context, so one or two of them aren't necessarily appropriate for writing, but most of them are. And the first on the list was doodle something.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Doodling can actually help you to stay present, engaged, and enhance recall.
Right.
Okay. Sign up for a class in something you've never done before.
Yeah, that's a good one.
On the basis that creativity flourishes when you get out of your comfort zone. Right. So I can think of applications there for writers, not necessarily to be done in the next 10 minutes, however. Create the right environment. In a business sense, it's make your environment a creative, safe space where unusual ideas are celebrated. But again, for the writer working solo, creating.
For example, I cannot work if there's anything else on my desk apart. Yeah. Can't have bits of paper, can't have rubbish.
Right.
Totally obsessively tidy when I.
Yeah.
I'm the opposite.
Yeah. Me too.
I have piles all over the place.
Yeah, me too.
Pause the brainstorming and move your body.
Yeah. Well,
we've talked about that before, haven't we?
Yeah, it's actually really
getting
important.
Up and going moving for a around. Walk, that sort of thing. Start a sketchbook.
Linda's doodling, by the way.
I am. Okay. Yeah. Well done. Go to the top of the class.
It doesn't mean she's not listening. It means she's more present.
I am listening.
Draw for the enjoyment and reap benefits across your activities. Now then, Nicola, this one won't work for you. Then keep toys on your desk. Building something physically with your hands can be just the creative jolt you need.
What kind of toys are we talking about then?
Lego. Lego, I reckon.
Yeah.
Okay. Engage in flash fiction. Try writing 100-word stories to get creative juices flowing.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what we just did was the 30 circles test.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And another one, again, this is a business context, role play away. Role playing with co-workers can generate brilliant solutions and revelations. But, of course, if you have a writer's group, then, yeah, you can do that.
Well, we did that, didn't we?
Yeah, you did
that with conflict.
Shudder.
Yeah.
One of the other things about role play, you know, and I think I read this somewhere in a business context, but, you know, you give people an idea to come up with creative solutions and they do what they do. And then you say to them, do the exercise again, but imagine you're a hippie, you know.
Oh, yeah.
Space. And then you get different things. You almost liberate them from themselves to have more off-the-wall, wilder ideas.
That sounds great.
Right.
Mm-hmm. That's good.
Yeah.
So I just thought that would be
a good exercise.
It's good little
icebreaker.
Yeah, very
is.
Good. Thank you.
It is. I wonder about doodling. I always doodle sort of the same things every time I doodle. I wonder if there's something strange about that or if it's a sign of high intelligence.
Yeah. You keep telling yourself that, Linda.
Yeah.
One of the tests or the articles about creativity that I looked at and how creative are you, that was one of the questions. It said, when you doodle...
Wow.
Are they very varied, or do you basically doodle the same things?
Don't tell me that you're stupid if you do the same thing.
The word stupid was never used.
Oh, so good. But what was the answer? What was the conclusion?
Well, I think the assumption was that if you constantly repeat the same sort of doodles, that indicates lower levels of creativity.
Quick, better change it up, better change it up.
So I immediately started doodling
wildly.
I can't doodle, it's too messy.
Well, my flowers don't always look the same.
I always draw flowers.
You do too?
Yeah.
Oh, you and I are going to have to get things out of the rut, I guess.
Yeah. I was once in a meeting. I'm showing everybody
my
doodle. I was once in a meeting and I drew about a business meeting and I drew about 30 of those.
Screws. It's a screw.
Yeah. All over my place. The guy next to me said, "What is on your mind?"
They're very well done. It's a 3D.
Very good screw. Yeah. Very impressive.
I've drawn a load of screws, and I don't know if I was. He obviously was hoping I was thinking about something else, but I was probably thinking we're being screwed here.
Interesting. Well, thank you, Pat, and thank you, everyone else, for your input. Now let's go to our discussion about creativity and see what we have to say. And hopefully I'll learn some things from my peers. I'm sure I will. But first I went to the dictionary to get a definition of creativity, just for the heck of it. And it says it's the ability to transcend traditional ideas, rules, patterns, relationships, or the like, and to create meaningful new ideas, forms, methods, interpretations, etc. Originality, progressiveness, or imagination. So,
well, I've got something that perhaps builds on that.
Uh-huh.
This says creativity is the act of turning new and imaginative ideas into reality.
Uh-huh.
Creativity is characterized by the ability to perceive the world in new ways, to find hidden patterns, to make connections between seemingly unrelated phenomena, and to generate solutions.
Uh-huh.
Creativity involves two processes, thinking and then producing.
Mm.
If you have ideas but don't act on them, you are imaginative but not creative.
Ah, yeah.
And I think that's quite important because even being, you know, the sort of low-level aspiring writer that I am, people who kind of identify you as a writer will come and say, I've got a great idea for you. Why don't you write a play about this? Why don't you write a book about this?
Right.
And that's an idea. That's not creativity.
That's fine. Right.
You know, they want somebody, you know, it's like they feel like they've given you some wonderful gift.
Yeah.
And all you have to do is turn it into a novel. So ideas are quite cheap, if you like.
Right,
but actual creativity is slightly different.
I love Elizabeth Gilbert's, I think she wrote a book on creativity, and she said that she posited the theory that ideas are all out there floating around in the universe, and it just requires you to reach up and pluck one and take it down and do something with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you don't do something with it, it goes back up into the universe and people, someone else could grab it. And that's often, you know, you get the zeitgeist thing of several people coming up with the same idea.
Right.
At the same
time. Telescope or various things.
And, they're synthesized. Yeah. What they're doing is they're synthesizing things that are happening in the time, you know, like flight is a good example of that. There were several people working on flight at the same time. And it all depend on the different influences they had.
And obviously, Galileo couldn't make a telescope until glass manufacturing had reached a certain level of sophistication to do that. So there are moments when things become possible and then two or three people are working on the same thing.
And I thought creativity was all about, when I was a kid, I was very creative and reading a lot and imaginative. And then I went through a phase where I didn't think I was creative enough because I went to art college and I could see that I wasn't original enough.
Right.
When art college, it was all about originality, especially in fashion design, which is what I was doing. And so I went through a phase of thinking I wasn't creative. Then I went into business and ended up thinking, oh, I am actually really creative because I can make ideas happen and turn them into things
as
well, which is lovely that you mentioned that. Now you guys have made me feel very creative again, being around you all.
Well, you know what they come from? For me, I get a lot of my creative ideas when I'm reading. Sometimes I'm reading a book and I have a notebook by me and I just keep thinking, because it triggers something for me that I either remember or that I think, this is a great idea. And also writing. One of the things I read talked about writing. Write as fast as you can and see all the things that come out. There'll be more ideas in there than you realize.
Mm. It's bypassing the conscious mind, isn't it? As we do with our free writes, we don't have time to think.
Do it quickly.
Yeah.
They come from just everyday things if you're on the lookout for them. For example, I had, when I lived in New England, in Rhode Island, I had a neighbor. It was kind of strange because we were both a little offbeat, I guess, but we both happened to paint our houses a lavender color, which was not anything in the neighborhood like that. And once after I'd done mine, before she did hers, somebody came and planted a whole lot of pink flamingos on my lawn. She sent me a message on Facebook and she said, I've just been back to our neighborhood, the Oaks, and she said, you know, it was fun to see our houses again. So I wrote and said, what color were they? I'd be very interested in knowing what they look like now. And she's wrote back and she said that mine was kind of a sunny yellow and hers was a kind of spring green. And I thought, well, that's not bad. I don't object to a sunny yellow. My lavender house turned into that. And then I thought, it is so strange to think about someone else in our rooms where we lived our lives for more than 20 years and other people are now in there living their lives in our rooms. And I thought, well, it's so interesting that you make these passages through life and then all of your life in there just gets absorbed by the next people. And And then I thought, well, that's kind of like life, because when you die, there's a little space for a little while, perhaps, but then it gets absorbed by all the other things that are going on. And I thought, gee, that's a great idea. Somebody living in yeah. mm-hmm. the house, in our room. Mm-hmm. So I think that they come from being observant like that, just looking at other things, and especially from reading.
Mm-hmm.
If you write fast, I haven't done that. I'm going to try it. Right. Write as fast as I can see what comes out.
And then when do you get your ideas? I mean, with me, it's where always my body's active in driving, ironing, showering. Those are my three places ideas pop into your head. If you're maybe I need to start ironing.
You're going to say showering.
Now you've gone too far, Pat.
Let's have another shower instead.
I think it's whether we're talking about ideas or turning the ideas into stories. For me, one very rich source of ideas is old newspapers. Because, you know, just reading court cases, or, you know, just read even dull stuff like,
The Women's Institute.
Oh, have you? Right.
Unsolved Crimes of the Victorian Era, something like that. Yeah, there's stories in there.
Yeah, those kind of things, and, you know, sort of seeing people. But I think it's important that what you said earlier, Teresa, about, you know, an idea is only an idea.
Yeah.
Mm.
And actually turning that into a story, that's really the creative thing.
Right. Yeah. I once started to collect unusual obituaries. And in Rhode Island, where I lived at the time, there was this organized crime kind of element there. One obituary, they had placed in here, he was known as, let's say, Tommy the Fingers. And he was part of this maid group. And I thought, why would he put that? Why would his family put that in his obituary?
Mm-hmm.
They obviously were proud of it.
Yeah.
And I thought, well, that's an interesting thing. Another one was when I was, we were traveling around. I was in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. I looked at the local paper. There was an obituary of a woman who was killed by her husband. They were roofing a house together, and he didn't like the way she laid shingles, and they got in an argument, and he killed her. And
or just pushed her off, or?
I,
come on, we need to know details.
We have to write the story now.
But isn't that, these things are so interesting.
Yeah.
And at one Christmas time, I mentioned this, and my daughter-in-law's father said, oh, I collect them too. So we swapped some.
What about you, Heather? You're one of our most prolific writers. Where do your ideas come from?
Listening to people, I think. And looking back over my career, I've done most of my nursing was with older people, and literally just listening to their stories.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes how people feel, you know, people telling me how isolated they feel.
Yeah.
I remember one lady telling me that, you know, people thought that just because she was elderly that she'd stop laughing. Nobody told her jokes anymore.
Right.
The home help had come and put her to bed early because that was where she was on the round.
Right.
And so
whether she wanted to go to bed at that time.
No, that's the awful thing when they have to go to bed because that's the time that the carer comes to put them to bed.
And nobody offered them a drink of wine anymore.
Right.
Or, you know, all of those sort of things.
Oh, God forbid.
It was as though suddenly they became a non-person.
Right.
And I've tried to remember those conversations and put them into, and I think what I try to do with my stories is write about it from the victim or the person's point of view, which you don't often get. You get a sort of what happened or what they found. How did that make people feel?
I feel that because I'm older than the rest of you, and I feel sometimes unintentionally, I'm sure, but you're discounted by those around you. You know, you aren't allowed to be, you know, as, like you said, don't tell your joke, don't offer your mind.
Well, one of my most successful afternoons, I used to manage a day centre for older people, and I was just annoyed that they had tablecloths that nobody ironed and they were all crumpled. And so I just, one Sunday, I said, do you mind if I just iron these tablecloths? And I stood with the iron and the ironing board and had four ladies sat with me, and we just chatted. Mm-hmm. And lots of things came out in that conversation. Yeah. And made some wonderful things about old-fashioned irons that heated up. And, you know, one lady talked about the fact that she was abused as a child and all sorts of things that came out in the conversation. That, and what they said that was really enjoyed this afternoon. And it was the questions that nobody had asked them.
Yeah.
They'd stopped asking them those things. Right.
It's terribly sad, isn't it? My mum's 91 and she wears Chanel number 5 and we laugh all the time and we take her out to the pub and you know it's a shame when people are just become generic old lady or whatever that nobody knows.
And there's no reason why people can't keep being creative and keep having ideas and keep enjoying. It's not like it's a pursuit, writing or reading or painting or all of those, music, that you know, that all stimulates creativity and feeds a need. I think humans generally, I mean, that's why I'm making my humans in my book, that they symbolise creativity, because it's such an incredibly inherent
part of our human nature to make stuff.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, you know, even when you're blind now, you can listen to stories. Mm-hmm. If you go blind, you can read stories if you're deaf. Mm-hmm. You know, there's you can watch performances on television with subtitles. Yeah, right. Yeah. You know, so there are ways now to sort of receive creative things. Yeah.
Going back to what Linda was saying about obituaries, it just reminded me, in Heysham in Lancashire, in the churchyard, there's a gravestone. I was having an ice cream in the graveyard with my daughter many years ago and just saw this gravestone. It said, "Here lies whoever. Actor, poet, and failure."
Oh,
he must have asked for that. He must have asked for that in his gravestone. But I thought that was absolutely lovely.
And of course, I'm reminded of something we talked about a while ago about the secrets Instagram account where people send in their secrets. Yeah. You weren't here, Pat. It was very good. Basically, there's an Instagram account where people send in their secrets and they can tell this person anything, and he publishes them anonymously. And we looked at some of them, didn't we? And rich vein of stuff for stories.
Sam Blake
there.
Said that she used that for inspiration.
That's right.
What was the website for that?
I put the link up.
Okay. Well, Sam Blake episode,
it's
which
on
is about
last this week.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Well,
okay.
Several weeks ago.
Yeah.
Now.
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah, and scientists have looked at creativity. Some of them have come up with common creativity myths. So one is the inspiration just hasn't hit yet. That's a myth, that you have to wait for inspiration. Mm-hmm. Other common myths about creativity: you're born with it, you have to be right-brained, and it falls into your lap, or you've got to be a little mad. In fact, what scientists are saying is creativity is accessible to everybody. It's not
developed.
I've got a friend who says, he's a very successful guy, and he says that if he's got a problem, voices it out loud to himself before he goes to bed, and he lets his subconscious get to work overnight, and he often comes up with a solution in the morning.
Yeah.
I do that with plot points. I'm thinking, you know, how am I going to get this person from here to here?
And
it'll just suddenly pop into your head. It's like it's all working in the background. Right.
I've done that, but not saying it out loud. Maybe I should do that. That might be really
But that's also like when you do something different, isn't it? So stop thinking about your writing, go for a walk, or if you must, do the ironing, or you know what I mean, those kind of things, because you're kind of physically busy. And it kind of liberates something in your brain sometimes, just going for a swim or something like that.
Right. I find the space of time between putting your head on the pillow and actually going to sleep, ideas pop in. It's like, you know.
Does it not keep you awake when that happens?
Sometimes, yes. I mean, I've got some characters that every now and again say, what have you done about me?
Yes.
Write some more.
Wake up.
Characters taking on a life of their own. I always used to think that was very pretentious when people said, oh, you know, I thought it was going this way and then it went that way. And I think, gosh, that's rubbish, because you're in control.
You're
actually, if when they really do take on a life of their own, they do.
They do.
Yeah, you can, in a way, you can resist it or you can go with it. With it, can't you?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, Victor's sitting there said, oh, this story's about me now.
And then, you know, I find meditation as well. I do guided meditation because I'm not very good at just thinking of nothing, because lots of ideas pop into my head. But guided meditation, I usually come out at the end of that with something, you know, just listening to a soothing voice talking me through visualising things.
And just looking back to all the people that we've interviewed in the last 46 episodes, all the people that have that are writers that have been published, you know, that they've gone all the way and got their books published, the one thing that they have in common is not that they told us they were creative. They told us they were persistent.
Right.
And they carried on and they kept writing. Right. And if you read Malcolm Gladwell, he talks about the tipping point. When you've done something for 10,000 hours, you suddenly get good at it.
Yes. Yes. Right.
So, you know, it is not just about the idea, it's actually about doing it, writing it down and doing the 10,000 hours. And,
does it have to be 10,000 hours? I won't live that long.
That's his theory.
You've already done most of them. That's the point. You've been doing it.
Yeah. He basically says that if you take up a hobby, for example, and you do it several evenings and a couple of weekend for 10 years and keep at it, you just get to a point of unconscious competence.
Oh.
And that's where the creativity starts to come, because you're not thinking about using the tools anymore.
Mm. That's wonderful.
And I think, you know, as I say, all the writers we've spoken to have said, haven't they?
Mm-hmm.
I just wrote. I just sat down and kept on writing and I carried on writing. And, you know, Sam Blake wrote 5 books before she went anywhere. And, you know, Aisha Mackay said she just sat at that kitchen table and she got up at 5 o'clock in the morning to do a couple of hours before the kids woke up. So, you know, a lot of creativity is application, resilience, persistence.
That's right. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And as we talked in a previous episode about rejection and how some of these people were rejected for years, but they were persistent. Mm-hmm. They kept doing it and they were published and many of them became bestsellers. Yeah.
What's that thing about 70% inspiration, 70% perspiration?
Yes, right.
93% inspiration, 97% perspiration.
Right.
Hard work.
I went looking for inspiration for writers, and I found a very good website called awelltoldstory.com, and this is run by Megan Rogers, who's author of The Raven Files, which are a spy series for young adults. And she came up with 4 sources of inspiration for writers, if you'd like me to share them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The first one is untold stories.
Mm-hmm.
So if there's ever been an idea or character from a book, movie or TV show that you've wanted to know more about, create your own version of that character to explore.
Well, that's what the Wide Sargasso
Sea. Wide Sargasso Sea, exactly.
Jean Rhys.
And she says, this is one of my favourites, it's actually how I got the idea for Crossing the Line, one of her books. After seeing The Avengers, I found myself really interested in the character of Black Widow. I hadn't known much about the character, but one thing that's clear is that she wasn't always one of the good guys. In fact, at one point she worked for the enemy, and I became fascinated with that transition from enemy to ally. The movie didn't dig into that idea at all, so I created my own spy and spy world to explore this concept. Mm. And you can do this with any story that you love or are intrigued by.
So what happened to Buttons after
Cinderella
ran off?
There you go.
If you know what happened to Buttons, please let us know.
And then she said the what ifs, which you've probably come across before. What if there was life on Mars? What if time travel was possible? What if pigs could fly? Pick a fact that is most definitely false and explore a world where it's true, or vice versa. Pick a fact that's most definitely true and explore a world where it's false.
Mm-hmm.
So start by making a running list of what ifs. No idea is too absurd or ridiculous. And when you find one that's really interesting to you, do an exploratory free write and see if it's an idea you can turn into a story.
I love the, reading the books about the downstairs servants in the
Longbourn.
Yes.
Longbourn. Oh, that's a fabulous book.
Yeah. I love that.
Baker.
But that's a great premise, isn't it?
Yes. What was going on? A bit like the Wide Sargasso Sea. Yeah. It's like the kind of offstage characters.
Yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know,
what are they getting up to?
But so well done in Longbourn. Absolutely love that book.
I did.
The third one is Flip a Cliché. Make a practice story idea new again by doing the opposite of what readers have come to expect. For example, the cliché, 2 people from different worlds desperately want to be together but can't. Instead, 2 people from different worlds want nothing to do with each other but are stuck together.
Yeah.
Or, cliché, the chosen one rises to the occasion to fight the big bad and save the world. Instead, the chosen one wants no part of being the hero, never gets their act together, and your characters have to find some other way not to die. The possibilities are endless. And the idea for one of her current projects came from this source of inspiration, not to mention a handful of ideas in the past. So brainstorm your favourite stories, see if you can pick out some of their more clichéd storylines, or take note of any storyline you've seen repeatedly, then flip each of these clichés and choose your favourite to write about.
Right.
And then finally, the fourth one, find something in real life and explore it deeply. And I think this is a good one. Go to a public place. Find someone who captures your attention. What draws you to them? Turn this person into a character by creating a story, backstory for them. Then develop a world for them to live in.
That's what Heather's done.
With yeah, exactly.
Yeah, right,
absolutely.
Yeah.
Or can do it with a location and develop a story about that place and the people who frequent it. Mm-hmm. But as I say, Megan Rogers, if you subscribe to her website, she sends you writer tips and things. So mm-hmm. I thought that was a really good find.
Oh, we'll put the link on the
welltoldstory.com.
Put the link up.
Many years ago, I purchased a little voice-activated tape recorder, back when we had tape recorders, and I went into restaurants or an airport where there are people gathered, or in a shopping mall. I like, you know, to have it in a place where it would record easily. And you hear just snippets.
Yes.
You know, and Heather was talking about listening to people. And I liked that so much, listening to snippets. I remember one time hearing a guy talking to a girl as they were walking past, I think this was in Seattle somewhere, and he was saying, and now they want me to record, you know, this program, but I have to do it in Korean. And I was thinking,
when you just hear those little snatches, it's so funny. And so I heard somebody once say, of course, that was before I went digital.
Yes.
What?
Well, I overheard three women at Manchester Airport going to pay for the parking ticket, and it was, it's how much? And the brief conversation, but what they'd done is they'd just gone into the ordinary car park, left it for a long weekend while they'd been across to Ireland. They thought, presumably, that that's what you did, and when people talked about how cheap it was, and they'd left the car there, and I think it was hundreds of pounds. But of course, by that time, we'd walked past, so I couldn't imagine what the rest of the story was.
Well, you could get the story of the whole weekend.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. Right. It'll just be the crowning moment when they you know, 500 quid parking bill.
Yeah.
Their bargain 10 quid tickets to Ireland doesn't look so good anymore.
I think you've definitely got to create space for creativity. You know, it's not going to happen while you're busy. It's not going to happen while your mind is full of other things. I find floating in the sea is when I had an idea for a whole series of stories about the place I was in.
Right.
But you can't... Creativity can't grow in a cluttered mind, I don't think.
Right.
You've got to make space for it, like you do every Tuesday.
I think when you're ironing, you're busy.
You just get bored.
Yeah, that's true, that's true.
We've got to all create more space for ourselves, haven't we, to be creative.
But I like the idea that I can go home and say, look, the reason I look at people and listen to other people's conversations is I'm being creative.
I know.
Not just nosy. One of the other ideas was the morning pages. I don't know if anybody's ever tried
them. Yeah, the artist's way.
I did it for some months, and I actually find it more useful now.
Yeah.
When I go back and read things that I wrote. The other day I found something I'd written a few years ago, and it said, I just want to say I find it really irritating that my husband uses the bathroom in a particular part of the house, which was close to the kitchen, every morning. Why can't he go upstairs? Sorry, it just really annoys me. And I thought, God, where was I coming from? It obviously was really bugging me because I'd written it all down, but it was quite an insight into...
Yeah.
You know, something that I was obviously feeling at the time.
But it reminds me of a nice work by David Lodge, where I can't remember the character's name, but the guy who's the guy in industry, and he's not allowed to pass solids in the ensuite, if you know what I mean.
Exactly. Now, obviously, somebody's taken my idea, but, you know, that's actually, you know, there will be a character somewhere who will object to people using the downstairs loo near the kitchen for anything other than washing their hands.
Yeah.
You know,
that's so wonderful.
I remember a woman I was in a play with, and she was talking about being at work and people using one of the toilets on the corridor, which is, they shouldn't be allowed to pass, she didn't say pass solids, I can't remember what she said, but they shouldn't be allowed to do that. during working hours. During working hours, that was it. People don't do that during working hours.
And of course, the back of the toilet door is a well-known repository for all things creative.
Yes, in terms of
you know, graffiti and little random thoughts, and then people adding it an extra bit on, you're trapped in there reading it.
Right. I always read the walls, especially if you're in pubs or you know, a bar somewhere, and the bathrooms are generally covered with, you know, people's
thoughts.
We're
going back in time now, aren't we? Because bathrooms are generally quite nice now, aren't they?
That they've not allowed... I think we encourage...
They have advertising on them now. They realise that the back of the toilet door is well read, and now they put posters on the back.
Yeah, they do in service stations, don't they?
Yeah. Well, I think I'd like very much to hear from some of you, our listeners, to tell us where your ideas come from, what kinds of things you've done to promote having more creative ideas. We'd love to hear that and learn more about how to do it ourselves. Well, we're almost out of time for today, but before we go, let's hear what's on Teresa's bedside table, and then Julian Cohen, by the magic of pre-recording, will share what's on his bedside table. Teresa?
Yeah, I'm reading something that was recommended by a listener, Rose, and this is Dead Man's Walk by Larry McMurtry. I've just started reading it. It's book one in the Lonesome Dove trilogy, and I believe that for the third book he won the Pulitzer Prize. Wow. Not somebody I'd heard of before. So the opening, it's set in Texas in the late 19th century, and there's a bunch of guys who are Texas Rangers. I'm not exactly sure what that means, but they're camped on the Rio Grande, so they're just across from Mexico. And the opening scene is brilliant because there are two young guys trying to break a horse, trying to get a saddle on a horse that they've stolen from some Mexicans, when a 200-pound naked woman walks up from the river with a snapping turtle by the leg. So if that doesn't get you, a lot of characters are introduced. So the woman is a camp follower who's following these guys, and basically they spend all their money on her. And there are a lot of characters introduced in this opening chapter, but you gradually pick up there's the two young guys, there's the major who's the leader of this group, but basically spent about 3 weeks at West Point and then left and decided to appoint himself to be a major. There's the older guy who has all the wisdom about the Comanches and the other Native American groups. And there's a dust storm, and then an elderly woman walks into the camp being led by a little boy. So you've got all this big setup, and it's really well written, and I'm enjoying it and really looking forward to getting stuck into it.
Oh, that sounds very interesting. I did see the film. It was a series of films, and it was very interesting. I couldn't stop watching, binge watcher. So, well, thanks, Teresa. Now let's hear from Julian Cohen.
There are three books on my bedside table at the moment. One is Anne Tyler's new book, The Vinegar Girl, which I haven't started, but I love Anne Tyler books. I think very few English authors have the capacity to write about families and relationships in any way that moves me at all. But a lot of American, Canadian, French even authors do. And I just love the way Anne Tyler gets into family relationships. And I'm really looking forward to reading her new one. It's sitting there. Vinegar Girl.
We've had a lot of fun today. And I, for one, have learned a lot about where good ideas can be found. But now it's time to say goodbye for another week. We send our heartfelt thanks to you for joining us. It's reaffirming and gratifying to see our numbers growing so steadily. And remember, you can go to Audio Boom, Stitcher, or iTunes and listen to any or all of our previous episodes. If you haven't joined our Facebook group, please do so by going to Write Club, the podcast group, and signing up. We love to read your comments, and we're always interested in getting your feedback. I think it'd be great to see where you get your ideas, so please tell us. Hope you've enjoyed this episode. Looking forward to seeing you again next week. Don't forget to tell someone else about us and help us to grow faster. Goodbye.
Bye. Bye.